This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. Sees if you try. Sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Heathens, greetings from the land of ice and snow. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with this week's Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. This is the weekend of December the 12th, 2009, and boy, is my upper body strength getting back in shape after shoveling snow here in December in Wisconsin. This show, Free Thought Radio, is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Not freedom of course, we're in favor of that, but we are the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Atheists and agnostics and other types of non-believers, secularists, born-again heathens, whatever we call ourselves, we all disbelieve in the same God, and we do believe in, if we can borrow a word, keeping state and church separate. We educate the public, we take lawsuits, we do legal complaints to make sure that America remains the proud, secular country that it was intended to be.
And so, as Dan said, we had a lot of snow in Madison, and so we really know the winter solstice season is upon us.
This year, the winter solstice is December the 21st, which is the shortest, darkest day of sunlight of the year, and it's the real reason for the season. This day is celebrated in the Northern Hemisphere for millennia, with festivals of light, with evergreens and wreaths and trees and gift exchanges and New Year's parties by human beings who are grateful that the days will soon be growing longer. The sun, S-U-N, the sun is coming back.
And so it's very ironic that this natural holiday is the focus of so many state church entanglements in the United States. And in a minute or two, we'll have a guest to talk about what she and her FFRF chapter are doing to fight back against Christian encroachments on public land at this time of year.
Publicly owned government land.
Yes.
Yep. And after that, an important interview with the well-known journalist Hannah Rosen, whose cover story, Did Christianity Cause the Crash? How Preachers Are Spreading a Gospel of Debt. That cover story appeared in the December issue of The Atlantic, and it is quite an expose.
And to set the scene for our first guest, who has a tussle with her county in Pennsylvania over a solstice tree decorated with the covers of atheist bestsellers and free thought books, here is a favorite ballad of ours by Madison's very own songwriter, Ken Longquist. It's called O Isthmus Tree, and I need to explain that kind of pun.
Isthmus?
Isthmus. He wrote this a few years ago when a conservative legislator at the Wisconsin State Capitol made a fuss because the state tree is called a holiday tree. He thought it should be called a Christmas tree, and Ken called it an isthmus tree because the state capitol is famously nestled between two lakes on an isthmus.
Oh, isthmus tree, oh, isthmus tree, capital rotunda. Find some perplexed and others vexed. They scratch their heads in wonder. While Christians claim you as their own, historically it's widely known your origin was pagan when the Yule tree was plundered. Isthmus tree, oh isthmus tree, the Yule light that glistens from every bough upon you now, shone long before the Christians. Your candle fire the ancients burned to bid the wayward sun return. Songs of light on solstice night still kindle hearts that listen. Isthmus tree, oh isthmus tree, your warm illumination
against the cold, dark hues of old, inspired imitation. This sincerest flattery of circuit box and battery should stake no claim or rename the Yule Tree celebration. Fast away the old year passes, fa la 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 lee.
And that's Ken Lundquist singing his song, O Isthmus Tree. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio. After this break, we're going to talk with Margaret Downey of the Free Thought Society of Greater Philadelphia. That's a chapter of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We're going to talk to her about why she put up not a Christmas tree, but a tree of knowledge this month in December at the courthouse grounds in Westchester County, Pennsylvania, and why that tree is being attacked.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021.
If you don't believe in God, or if you have a problem with organized religion, there is a new radio show just for you called Free Thought Radio.
At the house with the house of party, rocking around the Christmas tree, have a happy holiday. Everyone dancing merrily in the new old-fashioned way.
No, we're not rocking around the Christmas tree, but we are rocking around the winter solstice tree, or in this case, for today's show, we're rocking around the knowledge tree, or the tree of knowledge. I'm Dan Barker with Free Thought Radio. I'm here with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we have on the phone with us Margaret Downey, who's the founder and director of the Free Thought Society of Greater Philadelphia, which is a chapter of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio, Margaret.
Well, thank you very much for having me on.
Now, I guess we should start at the beginning. Tell us what this Tree of Knowledge is and why the chapter placed it. Was it 3 years ago in Westchester County, Pennsylvania?
Yes, our first tree went up in 2007, and we had conducted about an 18-month search with our membership to find the perfect symbol to represent our mission and our goals and our vision. And we had a lot of entries, but the board decided on my entry of the Tree of Knowledge. And what we're trying to convey is that we firmly believe in education and knowledge, and we want the public to look at the tree with the book covers as our ornaments, as our gift to the community.
Is it a real tree? Holiday?
We've always had a real tree. The first tree was 18 feet high, and the second tree was also about 18 feet high. And this year, the Chester County Commissioners passed a lot of new regulations restricting the size of our tree.
So where is the tree? It's on the county courthouse?
It is on the Chester County Courthouse, the same courthouse that has the Ten Commandments plaque on it that we tried to get removed many years ago. And we were successful in one part of the litigation, but then lost in the appeals court because the plaque ended up to be so historical. It was 80 years old.
Well, I know 80-year-old free thinkers. Come on.
Yeah. History trumped the Constitution in that regard.
But now, anyway, isn't there also a nativity display at the courthouse traditionally? And isn't that what prompted you in the first place to look for some kind of solstice counter sign?
Yes. The first meeting I had with the commissioners, I suggested that they just shut down the free speech zone altogether and remain neutral at this time of year, to not accept any applicants so that we would not be mixing or confusing the community with messages of religion on government land. But they rejected that idea. So when we decided to participate, what we wanted to do was make sure that the non-theist community would not be invisible at this time of year, especially. We believe in what most of our community believes in. We believe in human kindness, and we believe in family and friends and the beauty of the natural world, the changing of the seasons, the power of knowledge. And that is exactly what our Tree of Knowledge conveys.
Is there an angel on the top of the tree?
No. There is a giant white bow that matches our tree skirt. And it's only 10 feet high this year because of those new regulations. And the Chester County commissioners are so upset that I have called this display the Tree of Knowledge.
Which has got biblical roots, correct?
Yes, yes, it is.
A little poke at Genesis.
And so they're very upset about that. So they're demanding that I take down a book cover that says Tree of Knowledge. I wrote an online book about the history of the Tree of Knowledge and how to put up a Tree of Knowledge in your own area. And they considered that too much of a sign, and they demanded that I take it down.
Now, where are we on that now, Margaret?
Well, I did not take down the book cover that they find offensive, and I, in fact, put a little few more up there to make sure our tree was really, really full with book covers. And they apparently have decided to leave me alone on that issue because...
Well, hallelujah.
Yes, well, I have to tell you, it is your attorney, Rebecca, who helped make it possible for me to keep that book cover up there. She wrote a letter. I only had 3 hours on Friday, by the way, to resolve this. They were threatening to start to dismantle my tree.
This is a week ago Friday.
A week ago.
And yes, and you called and you were very distressed because you had gotten a letter from the county clerk at 1 o'clock your time saying the tree was going to come down at 4. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so, and that was just a clerk who took it upon herself. Did we ever get to the bottom of that?
Well, apparently she is representing the commissioners altogether, and it is her job. But, you know, I don't like to be pushed around like that, especially with my freedom of expression.
And you had a permit,
and if I would
right?
Pardon?
You had a permit.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We applied. We had to post a $5,000 bond. We had to get a $2 million insurance policy. And, you know, I made sure my application had all the I's dotted and the T's crossed, and there was no way that they could claim I was violating any rules. So they just tried to pick. And our latest battle now is that someone over the weekend took it upon themselves to move the creche from the designated zone that was next to the Tree of Knowledge. They apparently didn't like the fact that the Tree of Knowledge was right next to the creche. So
next to the creche of ignorance.
So the creche is now front and center in front of the courthouse, and I have the only display on a side street. All the other displays are out in the front.
And are the other displays also religious?
The menorah is going up. That is going to be in front of what they call their Chamber of Commerce tree. And that is a very secular-looking tree, gigantic, by the way, makes our tree look dwarfed. That Chamber of Commerce tree is 15 feet high.
Big things come in small packages.
And it's just one battle after another. I discovered our electrical box wasn't working the other night and had to go into the maintenance department and demand that they fix that.
So Westchester County officials sure don't like the Tree of Knowledge, huh?
No. And we're making them think, and we're making them understand that the community has this minority of non-theists who are very vocal, very proud,
so
and
what are
want
the,
to be involved.
What are the ornaments? What if it rains on these book covers? What are they,
oh,
large? or what?
Oh, they're laminated. Oh, you would love the way I did this. What we did was we accumulated two color copies of the front of books that we liked. So the membership was involved. Prometheus Books was involved. The Freedom From Religion Foundation sent me a lot of color copies of books. Annie Laurie's book is up there, as well as all of yours, Dan. And
Richard Dawkins' book is up there?
Oh, yes. We have every scientist, practically every scientist represented. Anne Duran sent us color copies of every Carl Sagan book he ever wrote.
Wow.
And we laminate the two color copies back to back into a pouch. And at the top of the pouch, beyond where the color copy is, we punch a hole. And we put either ribbon or pine cone clusters to the tree. This year we did the pine cone clusters. Last year we did ribbon, and it just sort of got saggy and droopy after a few
snowfalls.
Yeah, so the pine cones are beautiful.
How many books are there on there?
We have over 50 books on the tree.
So if somebody wants to see what this looks like, can they go to the website of the Free Thought Society of Greater Philadelphia?
Yes, it's www.fsg.org, fsgp.org, fsgp.org, and that stands for the Free Thought Society of Greater Philadelphia.
Well, thank you so much for your activism, Margaret, and joining us today.
Thank you very much. Have a happy holiday, no matter what you celebrate or how you celebrate it.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. After the break, we're going to talk with journalist Hannah Rosen, who wrote for The Washington Post for many years, about her intriguing new cover story for the December Atlantic magazine asking, "Did Christianity cause the crash?" Stay tuned to find out.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. or phone 1-800-335-4021. Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. Our guest today is journalist Hannah Rosen.
Hannah Rosen is editor of XX.com and contributing editor for The Atlantic. Hannah Rosen is the author of God's Harvard, a Christian college on a mission to save America. She's covered religion and politics for The Washington Post. She's also written for The New Yorker, The New Republic, GQ, and The New York Times. She lives in Washington, D.C. with her husband, Slate Deputy Editor David Plotz, and their two children. And not that we need an excuse to interview Ms. Rosen, but we were so struck with Hannah Rosen's cover story in the December Atlantic. The story is called, "Did Christianity Cause the Crash? How Preachers Are Spreading a Gospel of Debt." Welcome to Free Thought Radio, Hannah Rosen.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
And what did you conclude? Did Christianity cause the crash?
Well, it's this very sort of symbiotic relationship between Christianity and the crash. And headlines are designed to be provocative, and believe me how much mail I've gotten about that headline, which I didn't write. But it's a certain kind of Christianity, and it's a certain kind of causal relationship with the crash. How about that?
We're talking about the economic crash.
Talking about the economic crash, and we're talking about a kind of Christianity that, let's say, encourages people to take debts that they can't afford, a kind of Christianity I call the prosperity gospel, which has been and around in America for the last 60 years or so, shall we say.
I was surprised. I was a little skeptical at first when I read your article, but then as you laid out the facts and you laid out the geography and some of these pastors are getting kickbacks or fees from banks if they will sign up church members for a mortgage, people who can't really afford their mortgage.
Yeah, I mean, kickbacks is a little strong. Basically, what happened was, it was sort of the opposite of redlining, where bank companies used to avoid going into certain African American Latino neighborhoods. They decided they actually had to reach out into these neighborhoods. They call them emerging markets. And so they hired people who would go to what were called wealth-building seminars. These were seminars held by such churches, prosperity churches. And you know, a bank loan officer would come and speak at such a seminar. And as one woman told me who's testifying in the lawsuit, it's not like we would go in there and say, you know, we want to give your parishioners a bad loan. What they would do is say, you know, we both want your parishioners to have a piece of the American dream. So people would kind of cooperate on that idea. And that was, that's how it happened. And the geography that you're referring to is this notion that, you know, the places where the prosperity gospel has recently thrived is similar to the places where, the foreclosure crisis hit the worst, hardest.
Now, Hannah, what prompted you to begin researching this facet of the story in the first place? Was there something that struck you?
Yes, it was actually a radio program that struck me. I was listening to a radio program which was interviewing people about why they took out these bad loans. And, you know, it struck me so illogical, like such magical thinking. I was thinking, where did people get this idea that money was just going to come? Like, they knew what their bank statement said. They knew how much money they were making at work. Like, what was going on here? And then having covered religion for a long time, it occurred to me that this kind of thinking of, you know, sort of money will appear, I deserve this money, was very similar to the way money is talked about in prosperity gospel churches. And we all are familiar with these churches because they were very prominent in the 80s, in the early 90s. They were basically the sort of Jim Bakers, the televangelists, you know. And we all thought they had kind of disappeared poof of scandals, you know, in the late 80s. But in fact, as I realized when I looked into it, they have just been quietly kind of building and building in the mega churches in a kind of more respectable form. And so the largest church in America is a prosperity church. And, you know, as are
that?
Many mega churches. That's Joel Osteen's church.
Where is he?
Church in Houston. And he is, you know, his books are always, Your Best Life Now, are always tremendous bestsellers. And he, you know, when you read about it, he will actually say in his books, you know, they're very explicit. They say, like, well, you know, I had a small house and I wanted a slightly bigger house, and so God blessed me with a bigger house. I mean, the testimonies are actually about houses and getting bigger houses, even though you can't really afford them. I mean, he tells a story of, like, you know, I saw this house, my wife Victoria saw this house, and she really wanted it, but I looked at my bank account statement, and we really couldn't afford this house. But, you know, that was kind of ungodly thinking on my part. I just wasn't being a sort of hopeful, godly, optimistic person. I was being a pessimist.
Don't these ministers then ask the parishioners to give a love offering to the church or something and pray about it? Is that what's the connection with the church?
The connection with the church is just that this is a sign of godliness. You know, this is a sign, believing that you deserve and can have a bigger house is a sign of God's blessing. You know, the prosperity gospel basically teaches that a faithful believer is somebody who prays and believes, who will be rewarded with riches, I should say.
Well, you know, there's a number of Bible verses that very clearly say, and I used to preach from this Bible years ago, all things whatsoever you shall ask for in prayer, believing, you shall receive. It's very clear. It's very direct. If you ask for it, you'll get it. So it would be a sin to doubt that God could provide for you.
I guess, yes, that's true. And, you know, in general, there's a sort of general kind of vague Christianity, vague idea that God will provide for you and that you will get the things that you ask for. And then there's the prosperity gospel, which believes very specifically that God will provide for you in the form of material riches, sort of wealth, money, cars, houses. I mean, something very specific. Not generically God will provide for you, but, you know, he will provide for you with material goods. So I guess that's the difference.
So why were the lending institutions giving these loans to these really risky people?
I mean, that's a different question. That's a question to ask somebody. You know, that's a long story about sort of how the mortgage crisis, how the mortgage crisis got built and where the pressure was coming from. And there's sort of a lot of really great thinking and writing about that. You know, I guess I'm more interested in just kind of, you know, why what happened at the other end, sort of how the culture came to believe that taking these loans was a sort of good idea.
So can you give us some more examples of preachers who are, you know, besides Austin, who are spreading the gospel of debt?
Well, there's T.D. Jakes is one, Kirby John Caldwell. I mean, I list them in my story, and I am careful to point out that, you know, there isn't a church that has prosperity in its title. The way one determines whether a church is a prosperity church is by a sort of list of factors that a few people who study this phenomenon have, you know, have looked into, sort of what their theology is, what their preaching is, what books they sell in the bookstore. Sort of, are they the kind of preacher who preaches that, you know, God will reward you with material goods and riches?
Now, you're naming
it all has to do with their tithing policy too.
You're naming some really, really wealthy pastors, right?
Yeah,
who are
wealthy
promoting
pastors,
this?
Did you say?
Yes.
Yes, I mean, the standard criticism of the prosperity gospel that has been around for a long time is that, you know, the pastors are stealing from their parishioners to make themselves rich. This strikes me as somewhat simplistic. I think that what's being peddled here is not necessarily sort of give me your money and make me rich. I think it is a certain kind of hopefulness, a certain kind of, you know, idea of what riches and Christian hope means. I distinctly chose a smaller church and a church in which the prosperity gospel was actually doing something positive for people's lives. I mean, they were very marginal immigrants, and they didn't feel at all a part of America or the American dream until they met this pastor who really made them, you know, gave them something to aspire to, let's say. On the other hand, you know, often it sort of went off the rails and they took out loans, you know, they took out loans they couldn't afford, bought houses they couldn't afford, you know, invested in companies they couldn't afford, because that's sort of what they, you know, that's what church encouraged them to do.
Well, and then a number of those families would have two or three or four families living in the same house then. And then when they had to foreclose, it was multiply devastating.
Yeah, I mean, I was mostly reporting after the fact. I think that's probably common. That was a common way that people sort of had to pay the rent for houses that they couldn't afford. But I don't think it's that those multiple families actually had a stake in the house or were, you know, were sort of on the lease in any kind of official way, so they could presumably find another house to team up in. But it was that, you know, people would have to flee the country or, you know, would be kind of ruined financially, as they were all over the country.
And you start off with a Hispanic church where this pastor, these people come across and they're wanting the best of everything that America has to offer, and he's offering it to them. Is he one of the guys who actually received, you didn't call it a kickback, but some kind of a finding?
Yeah, and it really is not, it's not a kickback. I mean, it's a kind of, it was a sort of, a kickback, it probably has an, you know, official legal meaning. I would think it's like a
finder's
sort
fee?
Of like, yeah, it's like a finder's fee more. It's like we, you know, if you take out this loan, then you know, we will incur, this person will, you know, we will donate to a cause of their choice, which will presumably be the church. There was very strong encouragement from the pastors. There was very strong incentive for the pastors to encourage their parishioners to take out the money.
I'm Annie Laurie Geller with Dan Barker. We are speaking with veteran newswoman Hannah Rosen. Do you say Hannah or Hannah?
Hannah Rosen.
Hannah. Who's covered religion for the Washington Post, who's a contributing editor to The Atlantic. About her cover story for that magazine, Did Christianity Cause the Crash? And we'll be right back after this break.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio. Margaret Sanger's motto was, no gods, no masters.
I'm Annie Laurie Geller with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We're speaking with journalist Hannah Rosen about her cover story for The Atlantic this month, Did Christianity Cause the Crash?
Now, Hannah, you told us that you didn't pick that headline, but obviously you think that Christianity had something to do. Can you hazard a guess of what percentage of the crash was due to this sort of prosperity Christian thinking?
I would say it pushed it along. It accelerated it. It kind of made it okay and justified it. So it's less a question of percentage than it is sort of, you know, it kind of padded it with a sort of stamp of approval, let's say.
And have you seen anything in Christianity, in some of the more liberal journals or theologians who are concerned about this? Is there any dialogue going on?
Yes, there is. There's a big dialogue going on. There always has been about the prosperity gospel, but I think the new worries that people don't really know that it's happening because it's come back in such a sort of, dignified form. I mean, it's not this kind of ranting preachers on Christian television late at night in shiny suits form. It's more sort of, you know, business. It's sort of morphed from business culture to, from corporate culture to megachurch culture, and it's all part of the same message.
Your book, God's Harvard, A Christian College on a Mission to Save America, what is that college?
Patrick Henry College is a college that tries to train the next generation of Christian right leaders, and it's in Virginia. It's run by a man named Michael Ferris, who's one of the leaders in the homeschooling movement. And it was during the period when the Christian right was really invested in kind of training young people who were the sort of purest and most kind of politically minded and really intent on taking back the nation.
And of course, this is the college that was peopling the
Bush administration.
Yeah.
The Bush administration, right, exactly. So they're kind of on the, their people are sort of on the outs now, although, you know, Christian right history in America comes in crests and waves.
Yes.
Because they retreat into kind of a homeschooling mode and then, you know, off the grid mode and then sort of come back in power mode. So that tends to be the pattern of the religious right in America.
Now, when you said homeschooling, aren't most of the students who apply to Patrick Henry homeschooled in Christian programs?
Yes.
Is that the deal?
Yes. Well, they're homeschooled with sort of Christian materials. That the reason they're homeschooled is an idea that the public school system would inculcate them with bad values or values that their parents don't want them to learn. So, yes, there's a whole universe of homeschooling textbooks and sort of history books which have a certain version of American history and the founding fathers and, you know, even science and
causing us some. Causing us a lot of problems, probably because of state church entanglements that are based on bad history.
It's true, and causing heart attacks to many of your listeners, I'm sure, if they read sort of even a page of these various homeschooling textbooks. But there it is. It's a kind of, you know, thriving, robust movement.
Now, just how right-wing is Patrick Henry College?
It's a conservative Christian college. I mean, it would be, you know, on the political scale, it would be extremely conservative, solidly Republican. I mean, they've been dealt a lot of blows, and when I was there, it was sort of the Bush administration. So where they are in the Obama, I mean, if they're in complete resistance mode or if they've sort of, you know, found a different place now that Obama himself is religious, you know, I'm not sure how they kind of reconcile all those strains.
And what year did you go and research this?
I was there sort of around 2000.
Were there very early.
Yeah, so that was kind of the height of that, of the movement of kind of young Christian conservatives. And I'm sure we'll see it again. I mean, there's many people to rally around. Huckabee, it sort of depends on who the next Republican nominee is. McCain was kind of a disappointment to that crowd. But
they probably like Palin.
Right. Oh, they absolutely love Palin, I'm sure, although they fancy themselves sort of more intellectual than she is. I mean, her college record would horrify them. They're pretty serious, studious people. But yes, many, many things about her background would be really exciting and interesting to them.
Now, during the break, we asked if you were working on another book or project, and you said it's this website, XX. And what is that?
XX is a spinoff of Slate magazine. It's a women's website that Slate has started. XX.com spelled out.
I see.
X chromosomes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, that's the chromosome. Sorry, it is confusing, but it's the chromosome. We used to have a discussion within Slate, the XX factor, and sort of now we've got also stories and videos, and it's kind of a full fledged, much improved version of the XX factor that we used to have.
XX.
XX, sure. Right. Check it out. XX.com, and edited by me and Slate editor Emily Bazelon.
So what kind of articles do we find there?
Oh, you know, it's about hell. It's sort of more provocative. It's not straightforward feminist, and it's provocative stories about you know, culture, books, life. I think right now we have a long discussion going on with Julie Powell, who of Julie and Julia, who's writing a week-long blog about her book tour and sort of what she's experienced. She's reading. She's written a very kind of provocative and confessional book about being a butcher and also her affair. And so, you know, there's lots of questions that come up about female memoirist and what's appropriate and what's not.
Well,
and
check it out. Well, everybody. And, you know. Thank you so much, Hannah Rosen,
Thank
for
you.
Joining us.
Thank her, you so much.
Her article in the current Atlantic is Did Christianity Cause the Crash? We also want to thank our producer and our engineer, Brian Tirani, for doing the show here in Madison, Wisconsin. Go to our website, ffrf.org, to hear archived and podcast of all these shows.
Ask for more information at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. You can get a sample issue of the December issue. We also want to thank our earlier guest, Margaret Downey. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting. Stay warm.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.